I've left on this material one class out of the number that I have, because some of these may carry into two lessons, but I've got the material for the other class just in case that I need to. We had based on stewardship the verse in John chapter 3 and verse 2. It says, "Beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health just as your soul prospers." So the thought behind it, the principle behind it, you will be the kind of steward as how your soul prospers. If your soul is not prosper, then you're not going to be a good steward. But it will dictate all aspects of your life on how your soul prospers concerning God's Word. Now, I've mentioned just briefly, I'm not going to dwell a lot of time on it for those who are here for the first time, but I will look at some different aspects of stewardship that I have never heard before. And of course, we're going to deal with a lot of them that are, as far as the Word, the management of time, the money, the marriage, and all that. But we started these two, and again, it's just for your thoughts of what all you believe the Bible teaches that we'd be stewards over. To me, it's everything that God has placed upon this earth, from the animals to the plants, to how we take care of the earth, the atmosphere, whatever, on it, that God has placed that under our control. We began this study last week on two things today, I guess, is, if you will, the greenhouse effect or global warming. Are we to be concerned about that, as well as animal rights? Are we to be stewards over these things at best that lies within our ability? And basically, the greenhouse effect, again, as Paul says, you know, I have not much knowledge on this, but hopefully what I do have, you'll understand. The Earth atmosphere is made up of a thin layer of gases that cloak and protect the Earth. And the global warming people today say because of the pollutants, the carbon dioxide, everything that we're putting in there, it's breaking those thin layers that cloak down. And then if man continues to do so, then the rays from the sun and so on will eventually burn the earth up. And we looked at verses last week that this earth is going to stand until God comes back. Man will be here upon this earth. So there's nothing that man can do to destroy this earth. Man can do harm to this earth. And we looked at the 10 plagues. We also looked at that God, just like the human body, has made the human body, designed, created the human body where it can heal itself. He has also created the earth in that the earth can heal itself. And we looked at the 10 plagues, especially the waters turned to blood, that over a course of time, water will purify itself again. So we understand that. We looked at the purpose of trees. We had looked at catastrophes that we know that has taken place today, such as the Iraq War, when those fuel oil wells were exploded and this massive clouds and smoke and stuff went up, and they talked about what a destruction it was going to cause, and that smoke extended to as far even to California. No time it was gone, the air was pure. As well as when you look at the oil spills that you have in the water and stuff, what great, it did do damage, but again, the earth healed itself. And Connie was mentioning to me, when you look back at the bomb that was dropped on Iwo Jima, people claim the earth's destroyed. But in the course of time, that was gone. And so God has made this earth, designed this earth, that it will heal itself from these disasters that man can place upon it, the impossibility that man cannot destroy that. But again, can man do harm to it? Yes. And so when you look at, that's what we're focused on, the harm that man can do, and do I have a responsibility concerning that? We looked at Genesis 2 and verse 15. The Lord took man, put him in the Garden of Eden to tend and keep it. The idea there that he was to cultivate and dress, and to care for all things that God had placed under him, or that had given him as a steward, to commit it to him, to enslave him to do those things, which is one of the meanings, that to enslave, that God enslaved us over his creation, all that he had created. And again, these idea of these two groups that support these causes, are they wrong? No. But what they're doing is for the wrong reason. Now, we're to do the same, but yet for the right reason. And that's what we have looked at in the Bible, that has God placed the environment, how we care for the environment, the things around under us? Yes. But it's to be done the right way, as well as to care and for animals and so on. Animal activist group, again, they support their cause, yet for the wrong reason. Many do not uphold the Bible versions of creation. And so they say that man came from, through evolution, through the process of evolving animals. And so they maintain that animals should no longer be few because they are our ancestors. And for that reason, they support the activists to care for the animals because of that. And they claim that animals should no longer be used for food, clothing, research, entertainment, or beasts of burdens. Well, that's why God created them. And that's what the Bible says God created them for. But they say, and when you look at this, and going back, and others, Ray may have on this, that's the reason very little value is placed upon human life and abortion. They just think they're killing an animal. If you come from that, you're just right over and over. You're not in the image of God. That little child is not in the image of God. It's just an animal. It came from an animal. And so very little emphasis is put upon that, that there's no God. And that's what activates the environmentalist, that the earth is going to be here forever unless we do something about it. Well, the earth is not going to be here forever. It may be here another million years. And if so, God is going to maintain that earth until it has served his purpose here upon this earth. Then God will destroy it with fire. And there's nothing you or I or mankind to do with it. I don't care what kind of laws are enacted. That, but still, we should be concerned about things that we can help. We looked at animal rights. Activism is now being taught in school. The idea of evolution. The individuals believe animals have moral rights, such as a human. This is their teaching, because this is how they view animals on that. Some scholars support the extension of basic rights and personhood in some animals. They have a personhood, just like you and I, because we're an extension of that evolution. And most animals are considered for the ordinal of parenthood are the baboons and chimpanzees. That's the two particular, because they say at that point, this is where man started to evolve, okay, from those two there. And the thoughts of Bigfoot, the capturing the Bigfoot, and we finally have this where this no longer on all fours, but man, this animal, this beast, could now stand up and walk like a man. And here's just another point of evolution. And the meaning of person is that the animal has certain capacities or attributes resulting. They have attributes just like we do. Lowell pointed out, animals have instinct. That's what God placed in them, what was instinct. And I've made reference to, when you see a lot of things today that the news makes a big to-do, when, say, a cat and a dog are playing together, just, oh, look how they're getting along, you know. And I'm like, Lowell, you know, a rat might go up to a snake, and that snake might have its bellies full. When that snake gets hungry, it's going to snatch that rat. That's instinct. And there ain't nothing man can do that's going to do take that away. That's how God designed the environment that, from that, the food source. And they're going to do what the instinct is there for them to do. And so we need not look too much, you know, well, that happens from time to time. But when the instinct sets in, then that's how an animal's going to react. We looked at God commands man to fill the earth, to do it, rule over the fish of the sea, all the birds of the air, every living thing that moves upon the earth in Genesis 1, verse 28. And the command was given to Adam. But again, he placed man in that. That was to be man's responsibility. But man sinned and was no longer placed under that. But as they were reconciled to God, they were brought back to that and placed over as stewards. Psalms 8 and verse 6. Right there it says, "You have made him," that is man, "to have dominion over the works of your hand. You have put all things under his feet, all sheep, oxen, even the beasts of the field, the birds of the air, the fish of the sea that pass through the paths of the sea." In Psalms 145, verses 15 and 16, right there it says, "The eyes of all look expectantly to you." And when you look at this verse, you may be thinking of mankind. As you're going to read this, that the eyes of all who look expectant to you, and you give them their food in due season, you open your hand and satisfy the desire of every living thing. Now, who does God care for? Everything, okay? And so even the animals, from the least to the greatest, how does he provide for them? Well, that comes through the environment. And we'll look at verses concerning that. How does he feed you and I today? It talks about here the eyes of all who look to spirit. We look to God. What do we look to God for?
Everything.
All right. Does God miraculously, because Ray may pray for food and stuff, just put it on his table? No. And we know that. But does he provide for us? Yes. Psalms 104. In verse 14. He causes the grass to grow for the cattle and the vegetation for the service of man. How does God do this? How does God cause the grass to grow for the cattle? What's your and our responsibility concerning this? Are we to pollute and corrupt that which feeds the cattle? Can we do that? Sure we can. This talks about the vegetation for the service of man. Can we do harm to how this earth feeds us? Huh? What was the punishment for man in the beginning because of sin? In the sweat of your brow, you're going to what? Why? Why did he have to work?
Because the Lord brought about thistles and thorns.
Thistles and thorns. Would it still produce if man kept the thistles and thorns out? Yeah. But again, if you don't do that, then what are you doing to the environment that you just let things go? And you see pretty soon, things will take over. I can remember some of the, I don't know, too much older here than maybe Blaine, some other family, Colleen, Carol, Jan, and Marie and Eula, on a farm, it was a constant daily thing to grub fence ropes. Because if you didn't, the weeds and stuff would take over. And I can go back and look today of places, even in the mountains where Shirley was raised, where gardens were raised, and things were put out, you can't even tell it was the same place. And Oberneese was familiar with that. And all of them. But that was a daily chore. His idea, I always said, you never told your mom and dad you were bored. Because they'd take the boredom out of you through grubbing a fence rope. And things were kept. They had to be productive. I know most all the families that grew up, say, in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, if you were to eat, it was to come through that land. Okay? Was that God's way of providing? Yes. Was it necessary for you to do certain things? Yes. You had to be a good steward of that ground in order that it may produce. And in the meantime, God would send the rain and the sun because you were being a good steward. Okay. Any thoughts?
You were talking about the animals here in Exodus 24 and 5. God tells us very plainly, you know, don't bow down and worship them. Don't make carved images for yourself. But, you know, we don't see it as much here, but in these foreign lands, they'll set up temples for rats, for have cattle, like we were saying, people in certain Middle Eastern countries. Stuff that we're warned. Mm-hmm. Very plain.
But here in the United States, instead of putting up a shrine for a cow or a rat, we just build a mall. And that's where our food comes from. That's where our clothing comes from. And you see on the news where people say, I don't care what happens to the farmer. My milk comes from the store. Or I really hate it that they kill cattle for their milk. They honestly do not know where their food comes from. They think man makes it in the back room of that store. They do not believe or understand or know where food and water comes from.
And it's been taught, I even remember Morgan, maybe we're talking about getting a cow for milk. He says, you can't, it comes from Kroger's. And it's a concept, you know, and I've dealt with older people who think that, you know, you cannot grow nothing in the garden. Well, I don't have to go to the store to get, well, no, you have to go to such and such to get that. They have no concept of where stuff comes from there.
God has made certain promises concerning the earth and our inhabitants in Genesis 8. Verse 22 and 23, that no matter what, he said that while the earth is here, we're still going to have seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night, and it's not going to cease. But he also says in Psalms 102, 25 and 26, that this earth and the heavens, they are the works of his hands, they're going to perish, and all of them will wear out like a garment. So, you know, the earth is going to wear out. God has said that. That's also quoted over in Hebrews chapter 1, that the earth is going to, the heavens are going to wear out. Now, we can do our part in localized efforts to harm worse than what it is. But, you know, if you're living in the Sahara Desert, you know, where's the cold? But, I mean, you know, it's going to be, but overall, no matter what you do to the ozone, God says that's his law. That there's going to be harvest there and seed time.
Yeah. And we look at every aspect of creation. The desert, why is it like that? Well, it has to serve a purpose. God did not create anything without a purpose. We looked last week, the purpose of a hurricane. Why do we have it? There's just something come about that God didn't know. This was God when he created this earth. And the environment, all that's around, every aspect of this earth, this great world that we live in, where it was placed in the order of planets, the distance from the sun, it has certain attributes none of the other planets have, that God placed it for such. And you talk about the desert, why are they there? Well, they serve a purpose for some reason.
A lot of our weather patterns, like the El Nino, originates from Sahara over there in Africa and comes across, produces hurricanes, produces our weather patterns.
Yeah. Again, you know, you may say, well, you know, what's the purpose of that? It's just destruction. It's not. It serves a purpose. Everything that God created was good. And it's something that we need to understand, even though they may cause destruction. There's a purpose behind that, too, of why it caused that. The focus of the New Testament teaching is Jesus and our response to him. And we looked at Luke chapter 2 and verse 49, when it talks about that Jesus said, I must be about my Father's business. That Jesus was a steward of his Father's business. Not just the word, but in all aspects, just like we are. That he was over all. And he is to this day that all authority has been given to him in all things. Not just the word or the church, but everything that we are under Jesus' authority today. He's doing the Father's business, God's providence. He has authority over that, just like the Father was. The Father works his providence for the benefit of man and all things. And so we are stewards just like he was. As we looked at, stewardship, again, is the management of another person's property, finances, or household affairs. And again, these duties are not optional. As we looked at, you cannot, if you have 15 things of stewardship and you do 12 of those, you're pleasing the Father. Whatever he has placed us under, we are to be faithful stewards in all of that. And we understand from the Gospels of the words unfaithful servant. We understand what that entails or incorporates. And so we will be held accountable in the way that we manage all things that God has placed under us. Hebrews 6. Again, going back to the point that we looked at earlier. In this context, the writer there is just simply dealing with those who have fallen away, who had once been enlightened to the gospel and the growth of those individuals. Verse 7, he says, Hebrews 6, for the earth which drinks in the rain that often comes upon it and bears herbs used for those whom it is cultivated, that you and I, receives blessings from God. But if it bears thorns and briars, it is rejected and is to be cursed, whose end is to be burned up. Again, this is an illustration designed to show the consequences of not making the proper use of the things that we have. It talks about that the ground receives, it drinks in that which God gives it, the rain, which falls and makes use of moisture that brings forth, that produces food, useful to those who till that ground for food from God. And God approves man's stewardship concerning this. When he does this, he continues to do what? He continues to send the rain, that is, as long as man is a good steward. Verse 8 is the very opposite of that, of not being a good steward. And it's how are we to look as stewards concerning the environment? We'd be useful stewards concerning that, in that we do those things that God has placed us over. Any questions? We'll not go into it. Just when you look at Galatians 5, verses 22 through 25, it describes the attributes of a Christian, okay? The application is, it makes certain applications there that, you know, how we treat one another as far as stewards, you'd be gentle, kind. But in principle, that would apply to any and everything that we come in contact with as a Christian. Okay? These attributes. How am I to be when it comes to the environment? Am I to litter, throw down stuff? Would that be the type of person that Galatians 5 describes? Especially for those who may see Ray throw a bag of trash out. And they say, well, he claims to be a Christian. And so we're that. But when you look at Romans in 1 verse 20, I think, believe that one of the biggest reasons is stated here of why we should watch what we do concerning how we deal with the environment that we have. Romans 1 verse 20, for since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. What's the purpose of creation and all that we see?
Glorify God.
What they see, Ray throwing garbage out. Messing up that which is supposed to teach man about God. If we have, as Christians, no thoughts for that, you go anywhere, you just see over any bank in the country, you see tars, whatever. When people say, look at God's creation, yeah, look at it, it's filthy. Well, do you and I have a part in that? But again, on Judgment Day, the eternal destination of your soul will not depend on how many plastic milk jugs you threw out or on the side of the road. No, it's going to be after you become a Christian. What did you do? The trashing of diapers. Would this be something that preserves the beauty of God's creation? Most of you can remember the floods in the mountains that would get up in the trees and such, up the Redbird River and such up there. What did you see up in those trees as the water came down? Huh?
Trash.
But yet, things in that river continue to what? Huh? Because he'd live. Yeah. God's preserving that. That's what he does. What's the objective and what should we be pursuing in every aspect of our lives? That we are conformed to the image of God. In Romans 8, verse 29, for whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. And so that's what needs to be as far as the environment on that. Any questions on that particular one? Or any questions that some of you disagree with or on that?
Can you see what people do to their body, which is supposed to be something that God has set out to glorify Him also, to see what they do to their bodies, then you can expect much more from the environment. Because if they don't have any concern on their body, they can care less about the environment.
And again, I think sometimes, as Larry mentioned on this, Genesis 1 verse 26, when it says, let us make man in our image, let him have dominion, that we forget whose image we make and almost make ourselves like an animal sometimes. We forget that we're in the image of God. There's something different about us. And sometimes it's seen almost that we do stuff on instinct. As you mentioned some time back, what would you think of a man that come home and a dog done something to him, he kicked him? You're acting on what? Instinct, you know. And sometimes we look at it, is that what's to be done? What would people think? See Greg do this and do harm for no particular reason to something. How would people view that? Again, animal rights activists, again, their cause is good, but for the wrong reason. Does this, again, ask you to fall under the stewardship of you and I on this? Did God anywhere in His Word command that there be no mistreatment of animals? Does the Bible teach about that? Does God's Word say anything about this? Again, the question is, as a steward of God, are we to be a good steward for animal and soul? Why or why not? When you look at Exodus chapter 23 concerning this, in verse 12, it says, 6 days you shall do your work, and on the seventh day you shall rest, that your ox, your donkey may rest, the son of your female servant, and the stranger may be refreshed. What was God's attitude concerning an animal? In this particular thing, they would be given the same care as a human being because they labored for what? What were they used for? 6 days. You shall use them in caring for you and your family. But then they were to be given a day of rest that they might not be worn out or misused, if you will. In the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 6, we can see the Father's attitude concerning this in verse 26. And Christ there says, look at the birds of the air, for they neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? Again, one thing in this is the distinction of man or mankind and animals. And Christ said, you're more valuable than the birds. You mean God didn't care for the birds? Did He not feed the birds the same as He feeds you and I? Did He not, as far as the animals, have commandments that they were to be rested and taken care of the same as you and I? But what makes them more valuable? What makes us more valuable? We're created in the image of God. And when this earth ends, the animals and everything is going to be burned up. They will have, at that time, serve their purpose. And we need to keep this in mind. That's why they're here. For mankind's benefit. But to be used, if you will, in the right way. But yet, in Old Testament times, animals were used for sacrifice to meet other religious and domestic needs. Leviticus chapter 4. Again, this distinction of People say you cannot kill animals. If you do, that's wrong. And even laws today in this land that you cannot abuse or kill, almost to the point that the lives of an animal are placed at greater value than that of small children who are aborted or manned, that mankind anymore can take a person's life with a sniff, not even think about it, but you would never encounter or think of doing danger or harm to an animal because they see no distinction here on that. Leviticus chapter 4, begin with verse 1. Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel. If a person sins unintentionally against any of the commandments of the Lord and anything which he ought not be done and does not any of them, if the anointed priest sin, bringing guilt on the people, then let him offer to the Lord a young bull without blemish for a sin offering. Again, the slaying of an animal. What was one of the purposes that God placed animals here upon this earth? We're told here.
To make atonement.
The blood of that animal was to serve a purpose. When used at that time, in respect to how God said an animal should be used, it was not sinful. But to go out and just simply kill an animal for no reason whatsoever is wrong. Now, they would be killed for food. We understand the animals are for food on that. 1 Chronicles chapter 29, concerning this also in verse 21. And they made a sacrifice to the Lord and offered burnt offering to the Lord on the next day. 1,000 bulls, 1,000 rams, 1,000 lambs with a drink offering sacrifice in abundance for all Israel. 3,000 animals. Jehovah said you kill them and you offer sacrifice. Was that wrong? When you look at Romans, and it deals with that the potter has power over the clay. God, in creation of all things, gave us His word of how we are to deal with things. When He says you offer them as a sacrifice, that's what God desires. He's the potter. Just like He can design what dictate what you and I likewise do. But 3,000 animals. Now, you take that today, you just go out and just slaughter 3,000 animals. What would people think of you? Could you do it and not be sinful? Well, why is it sinful then? Why would it be sinful? If you think it is a sin, why is it?
In Genesis chapter
9,
verse 2 or 3 verses, that God gave man all the animals now for food. So, for food, they slaughter more than that in a day, most likely, the animals, but it's for food. But if you needlessly slaughter, just for fun of it, for the sake of it, yes, it would be wrong. So it depends upon the intent and the purpose of why you're doing it.
And God has designed the intention of why this is to be done. It's not left to you and I to try to figure out this. God, to me, has given us certain principles, even though they may not be direct statements or examples. But I think the inference, the necessary inference is there of how we are to do things. It's the same talking about your diapers, your jugs, throwing out the filth. Nowhere does the Bible even say anything about that. But do you believe it's implied in the principles of God's Word? We'll close with Exodus chapter 36 and verse 19. Then he made a covering for the tent of ram skin dyed red, a covering of badger skins above that. Animal was used for what? The adorning of what? Tabernacle. That's God's command. They can be used for such as that. That's where we pick up next week. Any questions?